Blog Talk Radio.
How are you? I hope everybody had a great weekend. Hi, Johnny Boy. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you, Joanne?
I'm good. Welcome to Applause Radio Show, folks. Tonight we have two great guests. I'm so excited. We've got the talented David Brigati from the Rascals and Joey D and the Starlighters. I had no idea he was in both bands. So we're going to talk about that. The Rascals, their great music, oh my God, the Peppermint Twins, you name it. We could go on forever with David. And then we have Billy Seidman. Billy is a session musician and also an in-house songwriter, if anybody doesn't know what that means. That means he writes songs for other artists, and basically they sit around and they just come up with music for these people. So before we start, say thank you to our sponsors, The Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kitnesville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times and Other Stuff in Clifton, New Jersey, Syntech Productions in Oka Harbor, New Jersey, Oleander Pogulations in Texas, Take a Break from Cancer.org for Pete's Sake, our new member to the family, The Observer, West Hudson Publishing Company in Kearney, New Jersey, and Joey Max Hot Dog Truckee Cafe in Harrison, New Jersey. Oral satisfaction guaranteed. Check them out, folks. Oh, boy. Sorry. We got to put that on a loop, man. I don't know. Anyway, I believe we have David on the phone. Mr. Brigati, are you with us, sir?
Yes, Joanne. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for joining us. I really, really appreciate it. I'm a big fan of the Rascals and Joey D. I had no idea you were in Joey D. And is that where you got your start with Joey D, or was it with the Rascals?
Well, yes and no. I have a story, but that's before you were born.
I still love them. I'm alive now.
Yes, that's right. That's right. We were so lucky.
So how did that happen? I mean, what was the situation? Were you with the Rascals first or with Joey D?
Oh, Joey D. But before that, if I could tell a little bit of a story. How much time do I have?
Oh, you got at least a half hour.
Oh. Well, when I was about 4 years old, no. I went to Garfield, New Jersey. I went to Garfield High School.
I know, you're a Jersey, and I'm in Clifton right now.
Oh, you How mentioned funny. One of your sponsors from Garfield. Who is that?
That is the Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield. Their food is delicious. Oh, my God. It's a fairly new restaurant. They've been open a couple of years, I think.
We'll go.
Oh, it's delicious.
Anyway, in 1954, when I was a freshman in high school in Garfield, we had nothing to do. It was the third to the last day of school, and they asked if anybody would like to entertain for assembly. So 19 of us got up. And we went down to the projection room and did a beautiful echo and started singing. But nobody was no one was singing the lead. So I took the lead, and the next day we got on stage. There were 19 of us. It was reduced to 17. Two guys quit. And we're waiting for the curtain to open. And when it opened, 10 more people left the stage. That left 7 of us, you know.
Did Eddie do it with you too, or you just did it by yourself at the time?
No, Eddie's 5 years younger.
So he wasn't
was in
there.
He was in grammar school at
the
time.
Okay, so they start dwindling off.
I was nervous. My knees were shaking. And the bass singer said, boom, 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 ba, ba, da, 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 boom, boom, boom. And we sang a song called Speedo.
Speedo?
Speedo. Very early rock and roll song.
I know, I'm
Earl
trying
Lewis,
to think if I know it.
There was a guy named Earl Lewis. And
they often call me Speedo, but my real name is Mr. Earl, right?
You got it, you got it.
I knew it was there. Okay, go ahead.
The audience loved it. And then I sang 3 other songs. I sang a beautiful ballad, and the female teachers loved it so much, I never did homework again. That's why I loved it.
Oh, that's
then,
so great.
Yeah, and we made a comeback the second year of our sophomore year, and then junior year, we were singing at different assemblies, you know.
Nice.
And from there, we got discovered. A lady from Passaic wanted to record us. She had Scepter Records, and she wanted to record us. And we said, give us one more day. We want to go to New York to audition. And we did. We auditioned for 11 companies and came home with 10 contracts.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
It was amazing. It was.
Well, it was a great time for music at that time. I mean, anybody could go to the Brill Building and get a song done. I mean, bought and everything. So, you know, it was a great time.
You know the words.
No, please. I wish I was born then.
Well, it's good to be alive right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, we recorded with Decca Records. A guy named Jack Please, who recorded the Four Aces.
Uh-huh.
And the blind singer. I'll get back to it. But anyway, we went back to Passaic and told this lady from Scepter Records that we're going to record for Decca Records. And she recorded the Shirelles instead.
Oh, wow.
That is amazing.
Yeah, well, hey, you guys got away, but she got another one. She caught another fish, so that's great.
Right. I actually recorded with the Shirelles later on, as Dave Brigati. We did a song, and they backed me, and it was beautiful, called The Face of an Angel, which it never got released or anything, but it is a lovely song, and I'm proud of it.
How did you wind up in the Rascals?
Oh, we had a whole history before that, if you'll allow me to.
You are allowed to do whatever you like, sir.
Okay, I'm going to go to Chicago. No.
Okay.
I'm not allowed to curse on the show because
you could
like
say
to do it.
We are not censored. You could say anything you like.
No, I won't do it. I promised your friend Arlene Grease that I wouldn't.
So
anyway,
tell us how you wound up with the Rascals. I mean, did Eddie get the bite? I mean, from you? I mean, what happened here?
He did. Yeah, he used to sing. I wrote a story about him. I was in my mother's bedroom. We lived in a poor little three-room house in Garfield, and I was singing, and I said, boom, 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 ma, ba, No, that's another song. I'm sorry. Anyway, my brother chimed in sounding just like Frankie Lyman, and I knew he could sing. I was very happy. He had to be like 12, you know? And he was very good. So I sang with this group, the High Fives. We had a hit record. We went to Hawaii, and we sang there with Frankie Avalon.
Oh, wow.
And Teddy Randazzo, and a group called the 16s, Casual Look. That was a great, great love song.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a number one record in Hawaii. So on the way home, we played in California. And then Dick Clark, we had been on that show, and he was responsible for getting our name out there, you know. He asked our manager for a piece of her portion. She said no, and he got rid of us. He never put us on the show again.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
I got a job in the grocery department, and two guys from Harrison.
Oh, my God. Two guys. I was in two guys every day of my life. I grew up in Harrison. And Harrison was like our go-to when we had nothing to do. We just walked around two guys. Oh, my God.
We probably
bumped into each other and didn't even know it. And another thing real quick is, since we're talking about possibly knowing each other, your niece worked at, I don't want to say her name or the place, but your niece worked at a place where I go for physical therapy in Wayne.
I need a first name.
I haven't seen her in so long. Shoot, we're Facebook friends, actually. I can't think of it. She's so sweet. She's a cutie pie. Glasses. Oh, she's going to hate me that I can't remember her name. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's okay. We'll get to it.
Yes. So now, let me ask you now. Joey D was fantastic, and so the Rascals were phenomenal.
Our group was called the High Fives. Our first vocal group, and Joey D actually filled in for one of our fellas. Father passed away; he quit the group, and Joey D filled in for about 6 months because I had known him. He was from Passaic, and I was from Garfield, neighboring towns. So, by and by, I worked in this grocery department, and the fellows came in. They said, "I have to commend your bosses. The place looks great. Sales are up in it." And I said, "Could I be in charge of this department?" He said, "Oh, no, you're too young." I said, "Oh, yeah? I'm not too young to do this." I took my card. I punched out. I went home, changed my clothes. I went to the Lodi Boys Club, and Joey D was on stage with his band, and he asked me to come. All in one day, I came and joined that group.
Wow.
And then we played all around. We played in Coney Island.
Uh-huh.
At a club called the Surf Club. Of course,
mm-hmm.
the street from Nathan's Hot Dogs.
Yep.
And the owner came in, and he was head of the Brooklyn waterfront, you know. He was a connected guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, say you're loading the place up, but you're bringing in all kids, and they're just drinking soda. They're not drinking booze, so I'm docking you. You're docking me. I said, take your money out for today. He said, no, I'm docking you for the whole week. We had just enough money to get back to Manhattan, and we called up Luther Dixon, who wrote 16 Candles.
Oh, another good one.
And, 40 minutes later, he called back. He said, "I got you a little place tomorrow night to sing. They'll give you $100. We went in, and the boss said, "I want you here next week, six nights, five shows a night. I'll give you $450. We did
there
that.
You go.
Said, I want you next week, $650, five shows a night, six nights. We went in, and that became the Peppermint Lounge.
Wow. Wow. Well, Peppermint Lounge was always blasted on all the radio stations over here on commercials. Way back, I don't remember what year it was, but way back, all the radio stations would blast all the clubs. They'd blow them up. They'd blow them up. And tonight at all these bands. They don't do that anymore on the radio.
No.
They haven't done it in years. So now I want to ask you the question I wanted to ask you real quick, Dave. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So now, out of Joey D and the Rascals, who did you – I hate to do this, but not enjoy playing with better, but which was the best of times? Or I know they probably both were, but give us your feeling on –
Well, I'll get to it. My story will lead to –
Oh, I'm sorry.
Why,
sorry, honey.
You know, it's okay. Played there for 13 months, the Peppermint Lounge.
Yeah.
13 months. You say, aha.
Okay.
Six nights a week, 13 months is not too bad, right?
No, that's great. That's great.
Months, the Peppermint Lounge.
Yeah.
West 45th Street.
13 months. You say,
aha. 13 months.
That's a great gig.
It was. So, little by little, people started coming in. The place was crowded anyway, you know. And several stars came in, and we did a song called The Peppermint Twist.
Yep.
And then several other stars came in, and it became a big deal.
Wow.
So we played on and off, went to different places, you know. And we played kind of all over the world. Actually went to Europe.
Right.
Yes. California, everywhere. Florida, Canada. It was very, very good. We met a lot of people, and we were very proud. We had a good dancing routine. We learned good dancing from what was his name? Tito Puente.
Really?
That's a Palladium. Nobody could outdance us because we threw that little Latin flavor into that too, you know?
Right, right.
The mashed potatoes and everything like that.
Oh, God. You can mash potato. So this tough
crazy
kid from Garfield becomes this famous singer. You're family, the town must have been beside themselves.
They loved it. Then my little brother came to the Peppermint Lounge, and he sang on the song with Joey D called What Kind of Love Is This?
Right.
He took my position in that song, and I changed my part around. And that was Eddie's first chance in the studio singing on the hit.
Oh, wow.
What kind of love is this? You know?
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of his career. So after a while, I got drafted, and I got married to get out of the draft, okay? And then I had to do a few other things. But I wound up singing. My brother started singing with this group called the Rascals.
Right.
And I wound up singing on all those songs. In fact, I wrote part of songs.
I was going to ask you if you wrote any of them.
Yeah, I wrote like 85% of What Kind of Love Is This?
How about the Rascals tunes? Anything on those?
No, I wrote a lot of backgrounds, and Eddie and I did all the backgrounds. We never repeated ourselves, but we did do duets, and we did do certain notes, but we always switched around so we could never double ourselves, you know.
Right. Well, now, let's I'm sorry, honey. Go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt. No, I was just going to say, What would you be doing right now if there wasn't a pandemic? I mean, would you be playing as Joey D or would you be playing with the Rascals?
I'm going to be too old. I'm lucky I stay home. No, the Rascals don't appear anymore. And Joey D goes out as himself now. He usually gets hired with an orchestra, you know. And I speak to him here and there. And the Rascals are no longer together.
Not at all?
Nothing. No. That's all ended. Stephen Van Zandt from the Springsteen band got them together. He got them back together for a while, for like 2.5 years, and they went all around the world again, and then they sort of broke up. You know, we're doing okay.
Yeah.
We don't need to keep doing that. You know, and I'm retired.
Right.
And my brother,
I said good. That's great. You're retired. That's fabulous.
Oh, it is. It is. I'm very happy about it. My brother still records younger musicians from South Jersey who are very talented, and he records them. And I forgot the names of what ventures they go out as, but he likes to keep in touch with that, and he's always writing songs. And we have a lot of songs that are unreleased that we recorded, you know.
Right. Oh,
I
just remembered Janice's name, Brianna.
Brianna.
Yes, what a sweetheart. Oh, I love her. What a good kid. What a good kid.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
who's barking?
That's my dog. I'm so sorry. I apologize.
No, don't be sorry. I want him to say a few words.
Yeah, well, he just did.
It's too bad I don't know what he means, but...
Yeah, me neither. Me neither.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
So now, again, who did you enjoy going out with? Did you enjoy more of the Joey D stuff, or did you enjoy doing more of the Rascal stuff? What was the best part? Which show was more fulfilling?
Well, the Rascals made it to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I loved performing there, you know, with them. And I sang them all of their songs except Good Lovin'.
Wow.
Then,
well, Joey, I'm sorry, Joey, I'm calling you Joey. David, I think we have a caller on the line. You want to take a call?
Absolutely.
Hello, caller. Welcome to Applause Radio Show. How are you?
Hey, Joanne. It's Arlene.
Hey,
hi, David.
Arlene.
Hello.
How are you, hon?
I'm fine.
Good. What do you want to talk to David about today? You want to tell him to get his act together and let's go on the road or what?
No, I just wanted to say that if David will do some personal appearances.
Oh.
And he didn't mention that, you know, not with a band or anything. Hello?
Yes, I can speak, you know, but I don't feel like I can sing or dance anymore.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, people may just want you there to sign autographs and things like that.
Right.
And I will go.
And you just play your music in the background throughout the day, have all your pictures plastered on the wall, and sit there and sign some autographs. There you go.
You know, and people would just love to ask, just like you're doing, people would love to ask him questions.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, right, David?
I love
he's got some good stories.
Oh, I know. I'm trying to think of what I could ask him without embarrassing anybody.
he's very professional. David is very professional.
With everyone but Elvis, you know?
Anything we want except talk about Elvis?
No, I mean, we play with everybody you could name except Elvis and
Yes, you have. I know. Now, you said that you didn't write any of the Rascals tunes, but you did write when you were with the High Five.
and Joey D too.
Oh,
and
okay.
I never got credit for anything because I'm an uncontracted hero.
Oh my God! Do you still write, or you haven't written in a long time?
I do. I still write, but my brother writes 10 times more. And
now, so you said the Rascals aren't playing at all. So what is Eddie doing with himself?
Well, he produces a young group from 8 years old to 16. They're very gifted from South Jersey. He produces them, and he still keeps writing and recording, and I recorded too, but we have unreleased stuff, which I consider very, very good, you know.
Yeah.
I love ballads and, you know, rhythm and blues.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite.
Me too. Yeah. I love everything, so. Now, what was I going to say? Arlene, where are these personal appearances supposed to be when things are able to open up again?
Well, they can call me, and I'll arrange it for David.
All right. So, you want to tell everybody where they can get in touch with you?
Yeah. I'm Arlene Brief Entertainment, 973-951-7885.
All right. Sounds great. Well, I would love to talk more, David, but unfortunately we have another guest coming up. So
that's fine.
If you're ever, are we working on anything like a book or anything, David?
I have major writing, and but I'm going to put it on an external hard drive. I don't know if I have the strength to release a book, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, like
he's having too much fun.
Yeah. Like
right, David?
You've got
a
lot to say. People want to hear it. So they want to hear your story.
I like the live talking about it more than the written word. You know, like your format is perfect.
Oh, well, you got to come back and see us then and talk about more of your stories. Well,
please.
I want to thank David. I want to thank you so much for joining us, courtesy of Arlene Brief Entertainment. Thank you so much, both of you. And
my pleasure.
And Arlene, you let us know if David can make it back sometime. We'll definitely do it.
I will.
Absolutely.
Anytime you care, but anytime, day or night.
All right, David. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. David,
thanks, Joanne.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
David.
Bye, bye.
Take care. Bye, bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
God bless. God bless.
Hi. Hold on one moment. Hi. We have a caller on the phone. Who's calling? Hello?
Hello.
Hey, caller. You're on the air.
Who's this? Is Billy Simon calling in.
Oh, hi.
Hey, Billy.
How are you? So sorry. You're a little
hi,
early.
Hi, Joanne.
Hi,
Joanne. Hi, John. Am I
how's
early?
It going?
No. I just thought it was someone calling in to speak to David. I'm so sorry. I apologize. All right.
All good.
On the phone, Mr. Billy Simon. He's a musician, songwriter, now author of the new book, The Elements of Songcraft, and it's a guide to helping you have a longevity in a song, what makes a song last. So, Billy, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. As a songwriter, I'm dying to hear what you have to say.
Well, I appreciate you and John inviting me on the show tonight. I hope everybody's safe and well. And, again, I appreciate being here. And, yeah, the book came out 2 weeks ago. It's doing exceedingly well. I feel very blessed to have a wonderful team of people around me who I'm in the music business, and now I'm in the book business, so I'm learning.
Right.
like anybody learns anything. It happens, and then you figure it out afterwards, right?
Exactly. Well, tell us how this all started for you. I mean, you started as a songwriter or a session musician and then evolved into the book, obviously. But tell us about your career and who you've written some amazing songs for.
Well, sure. I appreciate that. Like a lot of people of my generation, you know, the 60s fired our imaginations with bands
yep.
like the Dave Clark Five and the Beatles
yep.
and the Stones and
Absolutely.
Hermits Hermits and, you know, anything coming out of Britain, the hullabaloos, you know, just a wild array. And then, of course, different waves of bands happened. So, you know, cut to the chase, around the time I was 20, I got signed to RCA Records Music Publishing Division here in New York and made
as
records with people like, yeah, as a songwriter.
Yeah. Right.
And it was such a fertile time, at, you know, as a for musicians and songwriters to learn their craft. And
yeah.
there's 500 plus recording studios, as you guys know, and just a whole world and scene. You could really, you know, you could do go from session to session, and
yeah.
There was a lot of camaraderie and a lot of inside jokes.
The world
and,
was
a lot of gigs.
The world was our oyster back then. It was a great time for music, like we were saying with
yeah.
David. I mean, he came in at the perfect time, and, you know, when people were searching for songwriters, you know, and, you know, so.
Yeah, well, it's a different business today for sure, but talent is talent, and people who have something to say about the human condition and understand what it means to compete in today's business as a songwriter, as an artist. It's very, very different, but people need music. They still need to laugh, cry, party, et cetera.
Right.
So, but I'll just wrap up on your first question. So
yeah,
I went on the road as a guitar player with Ashford and Simpson and toured with them and really, you know, just learned the joy of touring and playing live shows and getting up for the shows and getting in the bus and getting to the airport and going to a hotel and, you know, doing that over and over again. Then I got a gig as a in-house producer, music producer for a well-known New York commercial music house. And, you know, really started doing tons of different sessions. One day it'd be an orchestra date. One day it'd be a jazz trio. One day it'd be a cappella singers. You know, everything from McDonald's to, Philip 66 or,
everything,
you
yeah.
know, just, yeah, a lot of commercial work. But some of the artists I've been associated with, and Cara, when she was, you know, super, you know, in the sort of zenith of her career with Flashdance, What a Feeling. Vicky Sue
did
Robinson turned the beat around. Ella Champagne King.
Did you do Why Me?
No, Why Me? I know that. No, Why Me, I think, was written by Gordon Grody, who was a former songwriting partner of mine for many years. I think he wrote Why Me.
Great
yeah.
song. Great.
Yeah,
well,
that's so funny that you pulled that one out of the hat. Good
yeah,
work.
Well, because I remember that one. I mean, I know everybody loves Flashdance, but I was listening to her before that, you know, so that's what I mean, you know, so.
yeah.
But now out of that crew, did you write any of their songs for them?
I had the flip side of Turn the Beat Around. You know, I've written a bunch of songs that have been cut, but unfortunately, or whatever it is, you know, I can't point at that one song and people go, wow, he wrote that.
Right.
That said, you know, my interpretation of all of it is that, hey, I just haven't peaked yet. You know, my catalog is extensive and I've had about five or six major publishing deals. So people sign me because they believe in my writing. And if there's anybody out there who wants to hear the catalog, it's at www.broadjam.com/Billy Seidman, S-E-I-D-M-A-N. And there's a lot of really wonderful, strong songs there.
Right. So now you don't write just one genre. I mean, it's funny. For me, if somebody gives me a title, I could write a song around it. Do you work that way at all?
I do very much. It has to be a good title. I have to be able to see all the green lights down the avenue to understand why I want to write that song, which is, I think, a good intro to, without giving away too much of the book, you know, I moved to Nashville in 1995, and I'd been published and, you know, had a measure of success, but it wasn't until I got to Nashville that I realized something so startling, which was... the really good writers, they really know what they're writing about long before they actually get in the trench and start putting all the wires together. To your point, maybe from a title, But they understand what that title means. They understand what's at stake in the title itself. They understand the DNA of the concept tied to the title. So, you know, and they're able to very quickly figure out what kind of song they're writing. So they, so what I've done is I've put together what I call, in my book, The Elements of Songcraft, which you were so gracious to mention earlier.
I will mention again.
I appreciate it. I basically put together kind of a manifesto for what I call a songwriting athlete. You know, another very key factor in the way, the reason people are so good at songwriting is they've written 300, 400, 500, 600 songs. Mm. You know, they're in a songwriting process. Just like nurses or doctors or attorneys train extensively over years and years, songwriters, just because it feels so groovy to write a song, don't feel like they're necessarily held to the same standard. But it turns out that being in that process develops your ability to stay present in the moment, to kind of witness the emotional transactions happening around you every day, and then see something different in it, in those transactions that everybody missed but you. And you found the title to, you know, to stamp the chorus, and you understood enough about the craft of songwriting to harvest that idea across, quote unquote, the song form, the verse, the pre-chorus, the chorus, et cetera. And and all those decisions really matter. The song, the form is so short in songwriting, you got to get everything right.
Right, and you got to fit it all in quickly. Now,
hey,
I wanted to
Billy, I got a question for Billy Joanne.
Yeah, go ahead, Johnny.
Billy, the songs today, Billy, I don't know about you, but I don't think there's one or two songs that you can actually come around and hum the music to, because they're not memorable. They just don't have nothing to it. They're almost like cookie cutter. You hear one, it's the same as the next one. What do you think went wrong? What went wrong in the process of the songwriting?
Well, I wouldn't quite agree with you, and I'll tell you why. You know, every generation's entitled to their music. And it wouldn't be commercial music if it didn't find an audience. So so basically, song form changes radically. So, for example, what was called a verse in 1950 has nothing to do with what we call a verse today. Production values change. Rhythms, syncopation change. Production techniques change. Sound, equipment, tools. Obviously, software and hardware, all that changes. But what stays static is, you know, songs about, again, joy, loss, hope, regret, gratitude, fulfillment, confusion. So all the emotions that still drive human interest to self-express still find their way into songs. And I think that what you may be referring to is that the music business is a business like any other business. They're looking for growth, and growth comes from aiming at a younger audience. So,
Billy, you know, a very young audience. Yeah, I understand the industry is cyclical, and like you said, goes with the generation, each generation you get, but we haven't changed in about 15, 20 years. Usually we change like every decade, the style. I mean, it has not changed. It's still, you know, when is rock coming back? When is, you know, good music coming back? Not that it's not good, but like real music, you know? I mean, I guess I've been waiting for this cyclical change, and it has not happened. You know what I mean?
Well,
I'm talking about mainstream radio pop.
Sure. Well, I stay very positive about it. I see that, you know, I see there's a lot of different genres. I spend a lot of time in Nashville, and I love what's happening on country radio. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not the same country music it was in the early 2000s
or the
90s or the 80s, but it has some really great entertainment value and some soulful value and some phenomenal singers and wonderful production. So I think that if you want to hear great music, it's out there. I think that you got to dig a little deeper.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe not, you know, maybe Z100 is not the place that's really delivering for you, but NPR, you know, in New York, or what is it, 97.9 or whatever that, you know, 97.9, what is it, whatever NPR is in New York, You know, I'm a big believer and hopeful in about the future of music. You know, it's funny, the last chapter of my book talks about that. It's called Bringing It All Back Home, and it's kind of based on, you know, when Dylan came up, he gave everybody permission to write in a way that was completely different than Tin Pan Alley or, you know, the Great American Songbook. And at the time, people were, like, up in arms about it. So, you know, and he lit a match to a revolution
that
basically
change.
gave a whole new generation of writers permission to write about subjects in a way that had nothing in common with the previous 30 years. So, you know, well, there's, you know, I really like this guy out of Chicago, Chance the Rapper. He's been around for 3 or 4 years. I mean, he's very inventive.
Yeah, I know
what
it is.
You know, there are people out there who are doing inventive things. And, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, you can point to the eras of the 60s, there was some of the greatest Renaissance music of our time came out of that, but also some real bubblegum came out of there too. So, you know, every generation's got its, you know, plus and minuses.
Right. Well, I wanted to ask you this before I lose my train of thought. That happens often. So before I lose it, now, let's say you're writing for, okay, Irene Cara. Now, do you write a song based on just writing a song, or do you say, oh, well, her voice would be, you know, how do you mold the two together when you're writing for a specific artist or you don't know you're writing for a specific artist?
Well, that's a great question. I think there's a few factors. You know, I'm at the place in my career where I've earned the right to write what I want to write, meaning to say, and I feel that if I, as a professional writer, I'm hip and aware of, like, trends and styles around certain people's songs or what they're doing and what the production values are around it. But it still comes down to a song title and a concept and what's the emotion you want people to feel when they hear the song, what song category is it falling into, and what's your intention to write it. So if I was working with an artist, whether it was Irene or, you know, Ariana Grande or anybody, the first conversation we'd have is like, well, what's going on in your life? You know, what matters enough to really write about it? What's at stake for you? You know,
right.
And that might lead to an inspiration song or it might lead to a party song.
Right.
But typically,
hey,
I don't
Bill,
really
Billy?
Get in the, yeah. Yes.
When you write a song, do you write with certain instruments, like that, saying, well, this is, I want to start this off with piano, or I want the guitar to come in here. Do you hear that as you're writing, or do you just specifically write the lyrics and then put the music into it later on?
Yeah, I mean, basically almost, I'd say, a combination of maybe three ways, typically. So typically, I keep a long list of song titles, so I'm constantly scanning the universe for ideas that I think would represent a wonderful title or idea. I'm a big believer that the idea does the heavy lifting, the title, and then, of course, how you write it. There was a song, when I was in Nashville, there was a song that I when I first heard the title, I was like, how are they going to pull that off? And the title was Politics, Religion, and Her.
Mm.
And I go, you know, and it turns out it was this friend, Sammy Kershaw was the artist, and it was an incredible song. It was a breakup song. It was like the payoff line was, let's talk about anything in this world except politics, religion, and her.
Mm.
You know, because he wasn't over the girl yet.
Right.
And,
wow.
And he was healing from that broken relationship, you know.
Right.
So, so that's kind of an insight to how I like to write titles. Not necessarily, that's a, you know, obviously a country genre title, but it doesn't matter what genre it is. It's really about the idea. The idea does the heavy lifting.
Right.
So if I was going to be writing with an artist, I'd definitely have a whole group of titles in my fist to say, hey, what do you think of this idea? But I definitely have this open probe with them to hear what's going on in their life, what do they want to write about, and I do some research. I see what they've been writing, what they've been releasing for, you know, a few years prior, so I kind of get a sense of, like, what they've already done.
Would you say you write more country or or just a little bit of everything?
No, I mean, I did right before COVID hit, I was working on a Broadway-bound musical called We Are Amina, so I was doing a whole theatrical project. I'm currently working with a wonderful New York-based arranger producer named Rob Mounsey, who's very well known. Worked with Idina Menzel for 4 or 5 years as her musical director. has made records and produced or arranged records with James Taylor and you know, a bunch of names, Sheryl Crow, Michael Bublé, played as a musician with Steely Dan, you know, just a super talent. So I'm working on a Brazilian-based project with him at the moment. And so, and I'm writing pop music with my buddies in L.A. and a few people here in New York. So it's the idea that rules at the end of the day.
Right. What instruments do you play, Billy?
I'm a guitar player. I've been playing guitar since I was a kid, and I'm sitting in my studio right now, and there's about, I don't know, there's about 28 guitars on the wall. So I love guitars, and I've got a lot of them, and so that's my main instrument. But I do a lot of programming. I work in Pro Tools, and I work with tons of software and, you know, keyboards, and I play, you know, I play what I call a Ranger's piano. I can get around on a piano, but it's not my main instrument.
Right. No guitar questions, John?
Well, I want to know, Billy, what's your favorite guitar you like to play the best? Which one is your favorite?
Oh, man, that's great. Well, I've got, before COVID hit, I'm a band leader. I have a band called the Sirens of Soul. And we've got, you know, we have a steady residency at the Art House Hotel here in Manhattan. And, you know, and that's an R&B, classic R&B funk gig. So I play a Telecaster on that. But I'm, you know, for acoustic guitars, Martins are pretty much what I play. For jazz guitars, I've got some Gibson, you know, hollow bodies, really nice jazz guitars. And I've got a bunch of kind of eccentric, really interesting electric guitars and basses. And so I'm doing fine in that. What about you, John? What kind of guitars do you play?
Well, I started off, I got a Trenny Lopez, a 1969 Trenny Lopez when I was in high school, because nobody wanted it because it had Trenny Lopez's name on it, and we paid $300 for it. I still have the receipt for it, and now it's going for over $7,000 to $15,000 for that guitar.
Absolutely. Yeah,
yeah, so I got that one, and then I went to a Les Paul. And then I went to a Stratocaster, believe it or not, because I found that I could do so much more with the tone with it, because I was the only guitar player in the band, so I was covering a lot of parts, acoustic and lead and everything. And I found out the Strat was the one that was able to handle all those different parts.
Yeah, it's a very versatile instrument for sure.
Now let me ask you this, Billy. Let's say you don't have a title as a songwriter. Now, see, for me, it's funny because I couldn't tell you how to exactly write a song. It's whatever comes to me, comes to me. It could be the music first. It could be the melody first. It could be the lyric first. So how do you go about doing it if you don't have a title?
Yeah. Well, that's a great question. I mean, I'll write with people and I'll be in a room with two or three other people, which is a very common occurrence in contemporary pop music. And it's somebody plays a lick. I play a lick, somebody's got a little piece of a melody, a little piece of a chord progression, and we kind of figure it out from there. I'm the same way. I collect melodies, and just like I collect titles, I collect melodies, and I collect, you know, chord patterns or, you know, bass lines and, you know, all kinds of interesting musical odds and ends, like a curiosity shop. So I've got a lot of resources ready to go. And if there are songwriters out there, I was just going to say, if there are songwriters listening out there, I mean, your versatility is a real factor in you having a chance to, you know, build relationships with writers who are maybe a little higher up on the food chain than you.
Right, right. Now, have you ever had this happen to you? Like somebody will say something and that'll give you a song idea. Like not what they said, but the way they said it. Did it ever happen to you?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I tell my students, I say, you want to keep your ears peeled. You know, somebody in your family has, you know, a way of putting words together, or friends or teachers, or there's somebody in your circle of six or whatever it is, your 6 degrees of separation, that has a way with phrases. You want to keep those people close.
Right.
I like to joke. There's this wonderful song by the Script called Break Even, and it's got a, you know, again, it's about the idea. They have a title that is just, it's wisdom. When a heart breaks, it don't break even. Well, you couldn't say truer words, right?
Wow.
So,
wow.
You know, I jokingly say, well, where did they get that idea from? And I like to say, well, you know, one of the writers, his aunt saw him moping around after, you know, a girl in high school broke up with him and said, well, Timmy, when a heart breaks, it don't break even.
Wow.
Boom.
That's so
you know
profound.
What I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. My point is that you never know where a great idea is coming
right.
from.
Right, I know.
The idea is to, like, be present in the moment.
Do you wake up with a song in your head every day?
Not every day, but I'm working on this Brazilian project, and I'm waking up with these carnival songs in my head because they're really fun. They're just like,
mm-hmm.
they're like just really, you know, entertaining. You just want to dance down the hallway to them. So, you know, those melodies are in my head because I'm
right.
in the middle of writing lyrics for them.
Right. Well, it's funny. For me, people that I've worked with before, I really can't play any instrument. So I basically can play a little bit to get the song out, but I could not play a full song, whatever. But and so when I work with people, they think the way I write is just crazy because I come up with the lyric and the melody, and I can't play a lick of music. However, I'll tell them what I'm hearing, and it just works, and it's crazy. I don't know.
Yeah.
I give a drum track. That's about it. You know? But,
yeah. Well, a lot of people write from beats, for sure. That's I do. It's a real factor, just getting a groove and a pocket going. But I just want to tell you, in my book, I think it's chapter 11, there's a chapter on protocols for songwriters working with musicians. And there's a whole couple of pages about how, if you're not much of a musician, how you could actually show the musicians who are going to put your songs together and put chords together, how you can do that really simply.
Wow. I'll have to definitely read that for sure. We kind of went over. I was going to ask you, like, how'd you come up with the tools in the book? But basically, it's whatever comes to us as songwriters. You know what I mean? I don't believe there's any set way of writing a song. If it's there, it's there. You know what I mean? If it's, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, the quick answer is this. You know, as you listen to some of the most famous songs in the world from every era, you can start to see that there's a trend in terms of how the great writers put their songs together. And the elements of songcraft is really, it's like a demasking, critiquing tool so that it's basically take apart a lot of famous songs and show writers how they can listen to them to see the mechanics of how the songs were put together. And then
right.
they can apply those tools to their own songs.
Right. Now, how do you know? A lot of songwriters have this problem. How do you know when the song is done? You know how many times people say, oh, it needs this, it needs that, let's tweak this, let's tweak that, and it takes forever for a song to get done. When do you know, you personally?
Yeah, I mean, I rewrite songs maybe somewhere between 8 and 13 times. You know,
yeah.
in terms of like, by the time if I'm doing any more work on a song between 10 and 13 times, it's I'm either adding an and or a but or taking away an I or, you know, I'm fixing something grammatical. So basically I'd say by probably about somewhere between the fifth and the seventh in revision, the song is pretty much taking shape.
Right. And what made you want to write the book and share your secrets and your tools?
Well, I wasn't really thinking about writing a book. I had a student who had an agent, and she came to me after one of my sessions and said, this is a book. You've got to meet my agent. Talk to her about it. And really, I think my experience of living in Nashville for about 5 years, I learned so much there about how to unmask and put together strong songs. So my co-writers in Nashville really, you know, they taught me so well, and I really learned how to listen. And that's really the difference, you know. If you're a young developing writer, you've got two big challenges. The first is that it feels so good to write a song, you're convinced the song is good.
Right.
So there's not much criteria for you to have the ability to make a judgment about how good the song is landing on the listener's ear. You know, it's all about the listener.
Right,
you know?
Right.
You're in one business if you're a songwriter, that's the communications business. So how well are you communicating? It's not about what you think, it's what the audience thinks.
Right, exactly.
And then and the second challenge facing a lot of developing writers is oftentimes they aim too low with the aspiration for the song itself. The title or the concept or the idea is not sufficiently organized or put together or focused for an audience to see their life in the song. So the audience is not able to really connect with, the nature of the theme because the writer kind of aimed a little too low in the song's aspiration.
Right. Well, speaking of Memphis, I'd like to play Cry Like a Girl. Who is singing that?
Oh, that's a wonderful artist named Brooke Moriber.
She's
great. Brooke's got a wonderful storied, history in New York and in the last few years been spending more time in Nashville. So that was, Brooke and I wrote that song and a guy named Fred Mullins produced it and a wonderful chart-busting mixer, a guy named Chris Lord-Alge, mixed the song and did a wonderful job with it.
Well, I'd like to play it if that's okay with you. John, you want to play? Ladies and gentlemen, Cry Like a Girl. It's really good. Check it out. Great vocals and great music. You hit all four. on that.
Oh, you're so gracious to say so. Thanks so much, Joanne.
Oh, that's a hit, man. That's a hit.
And I could tap my foot to that constantly. It was great.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. I think it's definitely a hit. Has it been released yet?
What's that?
Has it been released yet?
No, it's been released. It's available. It's on. It's everywhere. It's Apple Music, Spotify. You can find it. It's on YouTube. Brooke Moriber is the artist.
Cool.
Yeah, Cry Like a Girl. You type it in. It's going to pop up.
Nice.
There's videos.
Is it on the charts?
T-shirts. There's videos.
What number is it at on the Billboard?
No, it's not. I don't think it's charted, but.
Okay.
It might be on the Americana charts. I'm not sure.
It should be. It should be. That definitely is a hit. I swear it is. Oh, my God.
Oh.
Right, John? Yeah, that was great.
Oh, yeah. I definitely like it. Yep.
Yep,
and
cool.
I found it on YouTube. Yep.
No, cool.
Really nice.
Now Billy, I know we're running out of time, but now with the new way of recording so much electronics, do you like it? It's definitely easier to do right now, but
yeah.
You like it better or no, you like the raw deal?
It's all, to me, it's all tools. You know, I love recording with live session players. I love recording by myself. I was recording vocals and guitar today and programming. And so to me, it's all a means to an end. Nothing pleased me more than actually cutting live tracks with live players. Or producing a vocal, but again, it's a privilege to wake up every day and be thinking about music, and having a chance to make music and make a living at it. So
nice, absolutely. And before we go, what is the Song Arts Academy? How are you involved in that, and what is it?
Yeah, I've been associated with BMI historically for many years. Ran their BMI. Contemporary songwriting workshops, and around 2014, I took that workshop private so I could invite members of ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC to join it, and that became Song Arts Academy. So I have a school that I train songwriters, and
wow.
The elements of songcraft is one of the tools that we use. We have a workshop coming up we start our fall workshop, a 4-week workshop, on Monday, September 21st. And anyone out there who might be interested, I'm really easy to find. You can see anything about the workshop at www.songartsacademy.com.
And you're in the city, right, Billy? You're in the city?
Yeah, I'm on the Upper West Side, but everything's online. I do all my sessions now on Zoom. And, you know, I have about anywhere from 12 to 20 people who join. I've got people coming in from... They'll join from London or Italy or
wow.
The coast. So it's actually been a wonderful
wow.
Zoom platform for me. It's turned out to be a real boom.
Yeah, great. Well,
hey, Billy, is there any
Johnny.
I want to ask about that the Cry Like a Girl song. Do you guys plan to do a music video to that? Because I was just looking at the one now. It's just a picture of Brooke on there. There's no video or anything.
Yeah, there is a video. There is an official video out there, and it's a well done video. So you just keep looking for it
to check it out.
Because I think there's like lyric videos and still image videos. There's a bunch of different ones, but there is there's a live action video of Cry Like a Girl.
Good. I like to see that.
Yeah, cool.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Is there anything else in the book that you'd like us to know about before we go to get readers to go to it?
Well, I just think that if you're interested in writing songs, that you're going to get some great information. I'm not one of these, you know, I as the subject authors. I don't write like when I was, I went to, and I saw. I stay
right.
Focused on the subject. And, so I think that if people pick up, you can pick up the book on Amazon. You can actually read excerpts on Amazon to see if it's something that you like.
Wow.
The book sold out in its first couple of weeks, so they're reprinting more and they're getting them out there in the stores. I mean, the booksellers have the books, but it's been really well received. So it's been, you know, you spend X amount of time working on a book and you hope you guessed right.
Right.
I feel very you know, happy to hear
yes.
people really liking the book.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And I'd also yeah. say, even if you're not a songwriter and you're a music lover and you're just interested in, like, why do I love these songs so much? That I think the book is has a lot of interesting anecdotes or history about songs. There's also, important to note, there is a Spotify and a YouTube playlist. So as you're listening to the, if you're reading the lyrics in the book, you can actually listen to all the songs in the book
oh,
online.
That's,
so,
that's a great idea. That's excellent.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
Cool.
Well, again, it's a training manual for developing songwriters to become songwriting athletes and beat their heroes. That's
right.
My aim. I want to give you the strategies to beat your heroes.
Cool. Well, oh my God, Billy, I don't know. Do you have any more questions for Billy, John? I mean, what's it going on?
No, I have to. Oh, is the book available in an audio version, Billy?
Not audio, but there's digital versions of the book. So all major booksellers
okay,
have
cool.
it.
Wow.
Cool.
Hey, I want to thank you guys so much for making time for me
you.
Tonight.
Thank you. Everybody, Billy Steigman, the author of The Elements of Songcraft. If you want to know how to write a great song or just how to put one together, definitely pick it up. And also check out the Song Arts Academy located in New York, and that's www.songartsacademy.com. And you can get The Elements of Songcraft on Amazon, any online outlet selling books. Yeah, Bill?
That's correct.
Excellent. Well, I thank you so much, sir. It was an absolute pleasure. And I love that song.
Thank you, Billy.
I see that taking off.
Well, Joanne, John, thank you for your time. You're so gracious to invite me. And stay safe and well. And we'll circle back at some point in the future and compare notes.
Yes, and don't cry.
Thank you.
And don't cry.
All right, guys.
Take care, Billy.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Stay well. Bye-bye.
Bye. You too. Wow, I had like a million questions, but I don't want to give away my secrets, too. You know, I'm in the middle of writing something with someone, and I don't want to give away what's going to make that a hit. But anyway, oh, that was fun. I had fun tonight. Oh, well, thank you for our guests, David Brigati from the Rascals and Joey D and the Starlighters. David will hopefully be out there doing some appearances when we can get back out there and not singing, but, doing some autographs and telling some stories. And he's got a lot of stories, I'm sure, between Joey D and the Starlighters and the Rascals. I mean, my God. And this book.
Oh, there's
fantastic.
A book in there somewhere.
Oh,
he's
got
to write a book.
Yeah.
Has to.
He said, too much energy or something, he said, right? But and then Billy Steigman, pick up the book. I'm hoping to get one, The Elements of Songcraft, and I can't wait to check it out. And that was great. I had a good time. But thank you all, and thank you to our sponsors real quick. The Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey. Precious Memory Video, Kittnersville, Pennsylvania. Very groggy tonight, pardon me. KWV Wine, South Africa. Tees for the Times and Other Stuff in Clifton, New Jersey. Syntech Productions, Lenoka Harbor, New Jersey. Oleander Public Relations in Texas. Take a Break from Cancer.org for Pete's sake. The Observer, West Hudson Publishing Company in Kearney, New Jersey. Great paper, especially for our local folks. They got everything you need. Joey Max Hot Dog Trucking Cafe in Harrison, New Jersey. Oral satisfaction guaranteed. And the Hive Bar Bistro and Joey's, Joey Max, they have pickup and delivery and also seating. So, hey, while the weather's good, go get there and hang out and have a nice time. And we thank you so much, Johnny Boy. Thank you. I love you. And thank you to our guests, our callers, our listeners. We love you all. Thank you so much. We'll see you on Wednesday.
And as they say, it's time to go, Clara Bow. We will see you on Wednesday.
Yes.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye, Johnny.
Bye-bye.
Bye.